RPG lessons learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. Find us online at rpgllpodcast.com. Email us at rpgllpodcast@gmail.com. And find us on Blue Sky at rpgll.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RPG Lessons Learned. I am one of your perennial co-hosts, Tanner, and I'm here with your main host, Dusty. Dusty, what's up?
Hey, Tanner. I think what's up is we just finished another game.
We did, and we're trying this thing again where we're just kind of spontaneously talking about the game literally minutes after finishing it because we had some free time. I like the notes stuff, but sometimes it's better to get a more kind of immediate reaction to stuff, you know?
Fully agree. I think we'll go back to doing some notes and structured episodes, but I'm really enjoying just talking extemporaneously about the game that we just played. And the game that we just played is you ran me through is it called the Quick Start?
It is called Easy Mode.
So Cyberpunk Red Easy Mode. And I keep wanting to say Cyberpunk 2020 because of the older game.
Yeah, I guess they're all different editions of the same game. The video game is 2077, which is the one that confuses me the most. But yeah, this is Cyberpunk Red, which takes place in like before the video game, but kind of after some of the editions. So yeah, we our first time running and playing in a cyberpunk game, I believe, of any name brand, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This was fun for me. I follow the YouTuber Seth Skorkowski. Mm-hmm. You moderately follow. I don't follow any YouTuber that closely, but he often talks about Cyberpunk 2020 specifically. And then he's done a few episodes on Cyberpunk Red, and he's always extremely complimentary of the system. And I have to say, I see why.
Yeah, I get it. It's a little complex, but the complexity is kind of all on the fringe of like what the core mechanic is, which is basically a D10 plus your stat plus your skill trying to hit a target number.
And I like the D10. I like the just plain D10 roll. You made reference to it while we played. Something that's a little less range than a D20. I mean, literally half the range of a D20. And you said it beautifully. It makes your skill points matter that much more.
Yeah, I believe your character had like, I think your best skill, like plus stat total was like plus 12 or something like that, or something in that range. So you were doing a D10 plus 12 and trying to hit target numbers that range from like 13 to 17, stuff like that. So like, obviously with such a small die compared to a D20, a flat bonus adds a lot. And it makes your character feel competent. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I like that critical misses and critical hits are 10% of the time.
Yep.
So on a critical miss, when you roll a one on that D10, you roll your D10 again and subtract your D10 roll from your skill points. When you roll a 10 on your D10, you roll your D10 again and you add that to the roll total. So basically on a 10, a crit 10, it explodes. And then on a crit failure, a one, can I say it implodes?
Yeah.
You have to subtract another roll from it. Yeah. So I like that because it models those scenes in movies where, oh, I've got the drop on them. I'm point blank. I'm going to shoot. Oh, I'm out of ammo.
Yep.
So it models that beautifully.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call it like a cinematic system because the mechanics aren't like trying to create scenes or moments more like in kind of new style RPGs. They are. It is very like, you know, you're checking against a number and it's a succeed or fail. It's pretty binary. But at the same time, like you said, the variance leads to that kind of stuff. So I think thumbs up for me so far. And like I said, dear listener, we are just playing with the quick start easy mode rules. So, and I think we're going to just continue with those for the next little bit. So if there's stuff that is different in the full game that we're ignorant to, that may be the case. But yeah, what we like now, I think we like.
So I can tell if we're criticizing a little bit, I can already tell that this system is incredibly gear dependent.
Right.
When I upgraded my pistol halfway through the game, that made a huge difference in my mm-hmm. combat effectiveness.
Yeah. And I mean, Cyberpunk as the property, not the genre, but even the genre too, it is gear focused. It's about stuff. It's about modifying your body. It's about getting the gear to get the drop on guys. I would say, I don't think that's a weakness, but it's definitely something that I would say as, you know, I would make note of it to people coming into the game.
Right. That's fair. Weakness is, I exaggerated, something to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Is a better way to put it. You're right.
If you're playing BX D&D, you're not going to find a mace that does double damage from the mace that you started with, probably. Well, I guess there's magic items and stuff, but in Cyberpunk, I agree. There, it is easier to get better gear fast, I would say.
And better gear, to your point, is way better. It's twice as good, or three times as, well, not three times, but like it's twice as good. And that's crazy. So let's give people context for the game that we played. Why don't you talk about the adventure and the setup, and then I can talk a little bit about my character, and then we can both talk about how my character and your adventure interacted.
Yeah, so this is the easy mode adventure by Neil Branquino, who is credited with this adventure called Getting Paid. I will be spoiling this adventure, so if you are a player who wants to play Cyberpunk Red and you know your GM is running this adventure, you know, maybe tab out, but for everybody else, it's basically you are coming back from a job and your fixer, Laszlo, the guy who's like your handler, basically says the money's going to a different location. Meet me here instead. He's clearly under duress of some sort. And the main conceit is that dirty cops had kidnapped Laszlo and taken his money, and then were luring you in to cut you off as the only loose end about it. And basically just a dirty cops taking money from a criminal. And snipping you off. That's the basic of it. I kind of like it. It's very straightforward. I don't know if I had to critique this adventure, it doesn't feel extremely cyberpunk in terms of genre. It's not doing anything with the net. It's not really doing anything with transhumanism or with, like, this could happen anywhere. I get it. It's a basic adventure. But my critique of it is, like, the setup is pretty basic for a basic adventure. I don't know how you felt about that, Dusty.
Well, as soon as we finished the adventure, you said, what did I think? And I said, you know, I'm a little disappointed I didn't hack anything.
Yes.
And you were right. I wasn't playing kind of a hacky character. But I think when I think cyberpunk, my first thought is the Frank Miller graphic novel, Ronin, in which I don't want to spoil Ronin, but the human-computer interaction on an almost an organic level is very central to the theme of that graphic novel. Let's just say that. I also think of Akira. I also think of, and by the way, I saw Akira at a very young age. That's very formative. I think of Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah,
I've got to rewatch that movie.
Isn't it crazy how much Keanu Reeves is so tied with the history of cyberpunk as a genre?
It is.
Johnny Mnemonic, The Matrix, very cyberpunk. And then obviously he's in Cyberpunk 2077 as your main character who lives in your head.
I get it. Keanu Reeves is an immortal vampire who always looks the same.
Yep.
But I think of all those things, and you're right. This felt more like RoboCop. It felt like I was going up against some dirty corporate, not public servants, like some dirty OCP, you know, the Omni Corporation from RoboCop. Some dirty security guards that were run by a corporation is what it felt like. So the adventure felt very RoboCop. I could see if there was a RoboCop role-playing game, this would be the perfect adventure for that game.
Yeah, so there are a couple of other pre-written adventures for this system that have been released, and I was just kind of browsing the synopsis of them, and all of those sound way more wild and wacky. So I might read some of those and try and get some inspiration from them for what we play next. But yeah, I agree. It was like, it felt like a very dirty crime drama that could have been, you know, like you said, from RoboCop, or like, you know, honestly, if this was like took place in our gritty 70s Detroit Trail of Cthulhu game, you know, not that far off from the tone that we were going for with that too. So that's my only real critique though, but the system is cool, and I liked your character a lot.
Me too. I had a lot of fun playing. My character's name was 24/7. I wanted to be not the typical fighter. I wanted to be something a little unusual. So he is a journalist. And as we rolled his background together to discover like his whole story, his whole setup, what's the official name for all that stuff? His life path. As we rolled his life path together, it became clear that 24/7 was more of a tabloid journalist, producing stories for the so-called Scream Sheets. In I want to say New Jack City, but that's not the name of it. What's it called
Night City.
Night City.
Yeah.
So he's, and I played him the background that we rolled. Oh, I closed roll 20. It was something like power is what I valued.
But he was very nice all the time too.
But he was nice. He liked people. He enjoyed people, but he wants power. But also when people cross his path, he wants to hurt them. And I just thought that's Joe Rogan. So yeah. I played him as Joe Rogan, and I'm not endorsing Joe Rogan. I don't enjoy Joe Rogan, but I played him as if he were doing stories in a very Joe Rogan, unofficial journalist type way.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a fun twist on that, because obviously, you know, you're not working for the New York Times here. Let's be honest. You're here trying to splatter heads and take pictures of it and put them on tabloids and everyone's going to forget about it the next day. So
yep. That's it's all about
the tone of the world.
Absolutely. I'm very much like sex and blood and guts, moves, scream sheets, and in-depth hard hitting journalism does not.
Mm-hmm. So cool. And then how did you feel about the intersection between your character and this adventure?
Well, let me ask you, did I throw you for any loops?
No. The only loop I have is with this adventure, which I had to reread this several times to understand what the motivation is. So the whole thing is that you get the phone call and then you're supposed to go to this location. But on the way, there is a guy who offers you a briefcase of money. Let me read this verbatim for you. Actually, I'm going to skip around. It's not going to be verbatim. But at the center of some alleys is a hooded man handcuffed to a briefcase. I changed this to a woman, and I forgot about the handcuff. He offers it to the PCs and will fumble around with the key for far too long before handing it to them, dropping it in the process. This should be suspect. Take a note of which specific character takes the briefcase. There's a lot of assumptions right there. First off, if you're in this wet, wild, dangerous world and a guy just hands you a briefcase, would you take it? And like, it's not the way this is written is not setting it up as like, this guy is supposed to be your contact paying you. Is that the intent of this? I don't know. And I don't know if this maybe just got like edited weirdly, but it says the briefcase takes an action to open. Inside is 10,000 euro bucks. However, a check will reveal it's counterfeit. The hooded man is an undercover NCPD officer who is very dirty, and the handoff is a signal for his equally dirty cop friends to close off the exits to these alleys and try to kill the PCs. So, like, knowing that, what is the motivation for this part of this encounter? I don't understand it.
Yeah, I have no idea. Why would I take the money? Who is this guy? Who's this hooded figure? I'm looking for my contact, Laszlo.
Also, why is this handoff the signal to kill you? Like, I don't understand the whole setup of this. So
yeah, well, just kill me. Like, why do you need 10,000 fake euro bucks in a briefcase as a signal to kill me?
Yes. So that part was confusing. And if I were to edit this adventure, I would rewrite that and I would make it clear that maybe add some cyberpunk flavor. Maybe this guy is like cybernetically impersonating your fixer or something like that. And is like trying to hand off the money to you or something to buy you off, because then they don't have to pay you because you think you got paid, right? Like there's a more interesting angle here, and I just don't understand what the intent of this part of the adventure was.
Yeah, it could be a vid call with like a glitchy deep fake.
Yes, exactly. So I don't understand that, but I guess it just gets you to fight the cops and then you find out where they're holding Laszlo and then you go get Laszlo.
I'm going to go on a rant about quick starts real quick. The vampire, the original 1997 Vampire the Masquerade quick start, the adventure in that is called Safe as Houses. I have read that adventure so many times, and I have NFI what the plot is.
Yeah, some adventures are, as written, literally unplayable. In terms of you cannot play this the way that it's presented to you. And to be fair, Cyberpunk is not there. This is just like a weird encounter in an adventure that's only two encounters and I don't understand its purpose. That's different than like, I have to rewrite this to make this work, right?
And you would think with quick starts, like if I were editing the quick start, if I were in charge of the quick start as a product, I would say, you know, there's a pretty high percentage of players that are going to interact with this entire game for the first time through this free quick start adventure. We need to sand off every rough edge that we possibly can and make this a frictionless experience to experience cyberpunk flavor in an adventure that you literally cannot play in any other era or system.
Yep.
And to your point, this adventure could have been in 1970s Detroit. This adventure, Tanner, could have been in the Old West. It could have been we're bounty hunters and some dirty U.S. marshals are trying to take the bounty from us. It could be set in literally any era or time. There's nothing inherently cyberpunk about this.
And the thing is that the setup is good enough that, like you said, the core thing could work anywhere, but it needed a cyberpunk twist to it all, and it just didn't have the twist. I don't have any problem with the setup, but the setup on its own is not cyberpunk. So that's fair. I do want to give it credit, though, because it does say in the climax of the adventure, it says the warehouse is the PC's opportunity to go on the offensive and to end the session by exercising agency. There are many avenues you can do to approach the warehouse, but they generally will break down to either violence, stealth, or diplomacy, or a secret fourth camp, whatever they come up with. And to be fair, it does break out. If you want to approach this socially, if you want to approach this violently, if you want to approach this stealthily, here are some other ideas. And it doesn't just say, it's not laid out like a dungeon, right? It knows that it's time, once the players know the rules, it's time for them to use them. And I like that structure a lot. So I want to give thumbs up to that, because there are lots of non-starter adventurers who don't even assume that the PCs want to exercise agency. So
I will also thumbs up the pre-made characters. I think in a complex system, one of the hardest things you can do is make a character like from scratch. So to me, and I know some people online make fun of pre-made characters, like you should never use pre-made characters. Oh, pre-mades, let me roll my eyes. How can you know a character if you don't create them yourself? But for me, I have always highly valued pre-made characters. I would rather my first experience with a new system to be spending 2 hours playing it versus spending 2 hours rolling up a character.
Yeah, and you actually changed my mind about that. When I heard you guys talk about those Pathfinder beginner games and how much you respect and use the hell out of every single part of a beginner box, honestly, big thumbs up to you, because that changed my mind about that too. Because I was also like that, but I'm like, how attached can I really get to a pre-made character? And it's like, you know what? The pre-made character is the starting point that you springboard off and you have your adventure in. Somebody else's 24/7 is not going to be the same as your 24/7 by the end of this adventure. They're going to be a completely different character, even if the stuff on the sheet starts the same. So I am a big thumbs up for just use the pre-mades. They pre-made them for a reason. And if they suck, you don't have to use them again.
Here's another sales pitch for pre-mades. How many times have you and I started a role-playing game with a character that we spent an hour like rolling up and figuring out and choosing? And then we start the game and we're like, oh God, I have to use Persuade way more than I thought I would.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Vampire the Masquerade. I love that game. What was it called? Vampire Bloodlines. Yeah, I think it's Bloodlines. Yep. Love Bloodlines. Have played through it, I think, twice in my life. Once very buggy back in the early 2000s when it came out, and then again more recently with the newer modded versions that don't lock up so much. But same thing, like the first time you play, you have to go back and reroll your character once you get a flavor for, oh wow, this game is way more social and way less combat than I think. Until you get to the sewers 3/4 of the way through the game, and then you're like, oh my God, I need all this combat.
I recently just played Planescape Torment for the first time, and that game, luckily I had the good sense to look up. I'm like, this is an RPG from 1999. I need to know something before going into this. And everyone just says, the game doesn't tell you enough. Wisdom score is the amount of dialogue options you have. Max wisdom every single time. Just max wisdom. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I did, and I had a fantastic time with the game. So yeah, obviously you can't really just restart an RPG, but you know, you can take those lessons and figure something out, right?
So let's talk about this mechanic for armor and frankly cover, because it works the same way. So when you think about what makes this game different from other games, you're rolling 1d10 instead of 1d20, which means your skill points matter more. Got that. But then here's how armor works. I had a light armor jack that was supposed to be 11 because I was soloing it. You made it 14 armor points. So that soaks 14 points of damage. But then if anything goes over that, that 14 becomes 13. And then if anything goes over the 13 becomes a 12. And I take the damage that goes over. So it's always, armor is always damage reduction. Mm-hmm. And then your armor gets worn down 1 point at a time every time damage does go over the soak value. And then cover, I didn't fully understand cover, so I'll get you to explain cover. Cover works kind of the same way, right?
Yeah, so cover, and I don't love this, and I would love if you, dear listener, know how to make this work and why this works this way. Please let me know. But the rules for cover is that anything that you take cover behind has HP, and a 5 foot section of it, a square of it, on or a 2 meter square section of it has HP. So say if you were taking cover behind something that was thick concrete, okay, like a jersey barrier or something like that, that section of jersey barrier would have 25 HP, and it fully says it stops all damage until that damage is gone, and anything that goes past that damage, so say there's 3 HP left in that piece of cover and you take 20 damage, it says that at 0 HP, the cover is destroyed. Any excess damage is lost. So I just don't understand how cover doesn't just turn the game into a slog of we both sit behind cover and shoot each other's HP bags. And then once my 25 HP of cover here, I move 5 feet over to the left and I'm still in cover. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem, and maybe the answer to that is just you need to design encounters without cover or things that get you to maybe not want to be in cover, but that it's just, it's weird. It's like cover seems insanely good and maybe, but like insanely good to the point of like the game is about shooting at your cover.
I think the answer there is actually what we said earlier about weapons getting significantly better. I think if it were 4 PCs instead of one, suddenly that 25 HP of concrete barrier becomes one round, especially if we have like assault rifles.
Sure.
Of us dumping assault rifle rounds into it, and then boom, that cover is gone.
So you think it's just a math problem that doesn't really show its face in one-on-one type play?
I think one-on-one play makes cover a slog.
Yeah.
I think if it were four heroes. So I think the answer is if you're doing solo play, I think you cut cover down to maybe a quarter is probably too much, maybe down to a third.
Or yeah, a third or a half or something like that. I think that would maybe be the cleanest way to do it.
Because 4 PCs with assault rifles, that 25 HP of concrete barrier is going to be gone in one round.
Right. And because I'm already, one thing I do like about the way that this adventure is set up is it says it balances all the encounters by saying there will be a number of dirty cops equal to the players plus one or plus two in this part of the game. So like they have that flexibility built in there, and I'm going to keep that in mind. I'm not going to throw you against 10 guys who are all going to shred your concrete bunker that you've made for yourself in one turn, because as we know in one-on-one play, action economy is everything, right?
Absolutely. All in all, I mean, we were down on some things about this. We were down a little bit on the fact that the adventure itself doesn't feel particularly cyberpunk. But I had fun, and I want to play more of it. And I think, to your point, Tanner, I think there are better adventures out there. I almost want to ask you, instead of making your own, to run one right off the page almost, or as off the page as you can, to see if our Talsorian Games has adventures that are more like with transhuman themes or, you know, corporate dehumanizing people and viewing them as commodity theme, like with more hacking, with more net running. Like, I wonder if they themselves have adventures that are more cyberpunk.
Yeah. And so at the end of this one, the way that we left it off is that I kind of left a hook for a further adventure, if you want. And what I'll do is I'll get this group of adventures and I'll modify it slightly so that it includes the hook that we left off. Right. But you'll be doing the stuff that's in the pre-written adventure, but I'll just make sure it's relevant to the story that you have. Does that sound good?
It sounds great.
Okay.
So what lessons did we learn?
Lesson number one, try a new genre, try a new game. And I mean, we do that a lot, right? But we were doing a lot of bog standard OSR fantasy for a long time. And we have now both played with the superhero stuff with Mutants and Masterminds. And with this, I think those were both new genres and games to both of us, right?
And murder mysteries were new to me.
Yep. So we're spreading our wings. We're flying. And you know what? Not everything is a slam dunk, but you learn, and now you can have said, yeah, we've played cyberpunk games before.
Yeah, and I think a better adventure could make this a slam dunk. Mm-hmm. I love the D10. The armor mechanic makes a ton of sense to me. Now that we've talked about cover with respect to better weapons and more players and maybe how we could modify it for solo play, I think I understand cover better. Like, there's a lot that I really like. I we didn't talk about the skills. I love all the skills and how they tie back to stats.
There's a lot of skills.
And I like that. I don't like every role in D&D being a perception check.
Sure.
I get tired of saying roll perception, roll perception, roll perception, roll perception. And the first perception check I made, you had me roll human perception, which is distinctly different from perception, which I really liked. And I think I only rolled perception once and human perception once.
Yep.
Which is the mark of a very well thought out skill tree, in my opinion.
Awesome. I didn't even consider that. But yeah, we're thinking about moving forward with sort of a different character and like having sort of this extended story that revolves around a group of characters. So you're going to be playing a different guy next time.
I think the second lesson learned, and this goes against a lot of conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom is bring your best wine to the party. But I think we were trying something new. You ran a less than ideal adventure out of the quick start. And I just used a pre-made character, but we got our feet wet.
Mm-hmm.
We tried it. We have a flavor for it. We roundly understand the rules. And now that we know how the paint flows, so to speak, now we can try to paint a picture.
And if I can add one more confused metaphor to that, I would say that when I go to a restaurant for a first time, if it's like a traditional kind of like American restaurant, I'm going to be like, I'm just going to order a cheeseburger. I want to know what they do to this thing. Sometimes, you know, are there better adventures than this one? Mathematically, I assume the answer is yes, because there's so many adventures out there. But I didn't search for the best adventure. I searched for the one that was in the quick start, knocked that one out. And now that we have an idea of what the baseline is, we can explore in any different direction we want.
I have a different rule around restaurants.
Oh, really? What do you do?
In any new restaurant, I look for the dish named after the restaurant.
Oh, that's a good one too. Or like, yeah, the special or whatever it is, but yeah.
But usually there's some dish named for the restaurant. So we have two lessons learned so far. One, try new stuff. Two, recognize that you're trying new stuff and don't be too worried about trying to make it perfect. Just run the quick start as is and see how it goes. Is there a third lesson learned in here?
Because we play one-on-one and our time isn't so super precious when we get together, we know that we're going to be playing again in a couple of weeks. It takes the pressure off to have to do perfect this time. You know what I mean? Like if this sucks, and it didn't suck, but like if this adventure was a total flop, I would be like, oh man, well, we'll play again in 2 weeks and we'll do something else. So like the more time you can dedicate to something, the less precious each individual session is and the less pressure there is that each individual session has to be great, because it's going to be water under the bridge sooner than later.
All right. Thank you for listening.
People call them reviews, postmortems, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.